Welcome. This is the Chris Robinson Podcast. My name is comedian Chris Robinson, and I'm here with my co-host for today,
Dorian Gale.
What's up, Dorian?
Hi.
Hello. All right, so real quick, I am a stand-up comedian out of Melbourne, Florida. You are from?
I'm from Palm Bay. I represent Palm Bay, Florida.
Okay. So what this podcast is I'm going to be bringing in all different types of comedians, people that I know from doing comedy, mostly from the state of Florida. But we just want to start a podcast and talk about what's going on with comedy. So first off, quick question.
Yes.
Have you ever bombed like Tiffany Haddish?
I have several times in front of family members.
That's it?
Yeah, well, I think my mother was in the audience. I might have been like 19, and she came to see me at the open mic, and I had some jokes that just didn't flow. It was horrible. It was really bad.
Like what happened? Like what?
I was nervous because my mother was watching. And I think that got to me. I was like, frick, I can't act normal. It was nerve-wracking to have a family member of mine see me perform for the first time. And then also, you know, before I started stand-up, I had anxiety, bad speech anxiety problems.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a flashback of what not to do and just be comfortable and continue, man. There's always ways to get it back, even if you lose it at first.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is.
Yeah. So, like, you said that you had, like, so what got you started into stand-up? Because you said you had, like, anxiety?
Speech anxiety.
Yeah.
For the most part. I was 16, and my teacher had a poetry slam at our school to help us prepare for standardized testing. And she needed student volunteers to MC the poetry slam. So she took some members from the audience and said, hey, who wants any volunteers? Anybody wants to volunteer? And in my mind, I was like, life is short. And I rose my hand. And, yeah.
Ever since?
Yeah. Getting up in front of people. I think I was 16 then. The next year, I co-emceed the school town show and some other things.
So what's the biggest show you've done to date?
The Brevard's Got Talent, the first, in 2017, the first Brevard's Got Talent. I think there was over 500 audience members.
Okay.
Yeah, there was over 500 audience members.
What about that Polk County show? Because I know you did the Polk County show.
Polk County show.
Well, not Polk County, Polk State. Not penitentiary,
that's right.
College.
On April 28th in 2018, I opened up for DC Youngfly and Carlos Miller in Polk State at the Polk State College Auditorium. That was big too. I don't know, man. I have to go back and really look at it. I've been blessed with several opportunities. They're all big to me. I gotta treat them like it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I always want to treat each one with more diligence and what can I do better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I should treat every performance like it's my last and I want it to be my best.
Mm-hmm. But it's weird because, like, everybody's talking about Tiffany Haddish and how she had a horrible night on stage, right?
Right?
And it looked like from the video, actually, she was about to cry kind of when she was leaving the stage from what I saw.
Right.
But the thing is like, I don't know, there's two sides. Because the one side is, people paid a lot of money. This is a huge venue. You know you're doing a huge venue. And I'm going to give Tiffany Haddish more credit than I've seen a lot of people give her. She is a stand-up comedian. It's not like she knew somebody and just magically got into the movies. She was a stand-up comedian for years. So I don't buy that thing when people say, oh, Tiffany's not a stand-up. She doesn't, you know, she's just in front of this crowd because she's famous for movies.
Okay.
She's been doing stand-up for a long time.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of unfortunate that all this is happening right after Cat Williams went on his rant about her. Because even after doing his rant, Cat Williams came back and admitted he's seen her on stage and that she's been doing it for years. So, I mean, I don't really know exactly what happened to her. It seems like what happened was she has been doing so many movies and has gotten so comfortable in that space that she wasn't ready to just jump back on stage in front of thousands of people to be able to do that. Is what it seemed like happened to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what do you think?
That's a possibility. You know, staying consistent is something that is necessary with comedy. Because comedy is like math. If you stop doing math for like maybe 3 months, you're gonna forget everything. You know, mm-hmm. Math is one of those subjects where you forget everything. Comedy is constantly evolving, so you have to consistently stay in it, stay writing, stay working, stay performing. It's just something that you have to be in it to, you know, work that muscle, you know, or your muscles will be not, you know, not in use.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy is just one of those things. Acting, I'm not sure about acting. I've acted nowhere near that level, but I've acted, and you know, I think acting is a little different
mm-hmm.
than comedy. I would like to say comedy is much harder than acting, but yeah, comedy is just, I just know that it is something that you have to constantly work to constantly get better at, or else you got to catch up. You don't want to catch up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Good luck to her.
Yeah.
Hope it works out.
Right.
I guess, all right. So, first of all, I would assume it's safe to say your idol is Kevin Hart. Out of everybody. No? He's looking confused. He does a Kevin Hart impression.
I do a Kevin Hart impression for a good while. I favored Kevin Hart as a fan, as an influence. I don't think not so much anymore. When I was in high school, he was the guy. When I was like seventh to eighth grade, he was like coming up into mainstream world. He had always been a solid, one of the most solid comedians in America. But when I was like eighth grade entering high school, he was exploring the mainstream level of success that he's on, and I did like him for a good period of time, but I was also blind to what all of comedy is. You know, Kevin is on a level of success that has not been seen since maybe Eddie Murphy, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And people get confused with that. So, you know, what they do is they're like, oh, you're like this type. And, you know, when they see you, they try to label you. And that's not really, you know, it's almost like I do admire his hard work and success. I don't always like the way that people receive it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
How so?
You know, because even as he says, there's so many others, not him, the other people that he gives platforms to, like Rel and Carmichael, and now, in like the last 2-3 years, it's now becoming more leveled, especially with Netflix and, you know, the internet. I think it's becoming more leveled out. But he's the one who really put a stamp on that of this generation. And now he provided those opportunities to others to take over. So he's one of them. It just, every time someone sees me, I don't like it when they're like, you're like Kevin Hart. You're the next Kevin Hart. I don't like that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Why? Like, What's the part of that comparison that you don't like?
you know, it just makes me question if that's the only comedian that they've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when people are like, black comedians are one at a time. And you can't take them all at once. And I think that's false. I think what in the last interview that he did, I think he's really proven that point, that it is false. Even with his LOL network platform, you know, that's something that I realized. Because a lot of people, you know, they see comedy, they just see what's popular. But then, you know, he's able to shine light on those that are not as, you know, famous as him. And that's what I appreciate. So if I saw him, I'd give him a hug.
So do you think he should host the Oscars?
I don't know, man. That's really up to him. I don't think that people should have to consistently apologize. Like, if you had, like, a tweet or something, and it was 10 years old, and you've already addressed it, you know, on the biggest platform that you have, which is your art, I think it's, you shouldn't have to continue to apologize for that. You apologize because perception is everything, and people don't want to perceive you as being arrogant, which he's not. Like, it kind of frustrates me, you know, because there's so many other people who have said way worse things, and no one has asked them to apologize for it.
My only issue with the situation is, I think he was right, number one, right, to initially come out and say, I'm not going to re-apologize for something that I've apologized for multiple times,
right,
and something that happened 10 years ago.
Right.
However, what he did do was then he doubled back and then kind of apologized again.
Right.
And then went on Ellen and did like a whole I'm sorry kind of conversation. And it just seems like
I think that's him just trying to show that he truly is sorry, that people don't see that he's apologized, you know. And I was watching the interview and I saw the frustration. It looks like he's frustrated that, you know, people just don't get it. You know, he has apologized before, you know, and people just don't get it.
I think up front, he said what he meant and right, meant what he said.
Right.
And I'm not apologizing. Right. I've said it multiple times.
Right.
And then his money managing people came up to him
right,
with a calculator.
Yeah.
And said, listen, this is how much money this is however many millions of dollars you make per movie.
Right.
If you lose 3 movies because of this, because
right,
I'm sure he has at least 3 movies in the works right now. You lose these 3 movies, it's going to cost you however many millions of dollars per movie. Mm-hmm. Multiply that by 3. Get your black ass out there and apologize. That's what I think happened.
Public relations, right? The public relations
team, that's what they call it. His PR team told him that you better get out there and apologize.
Possibly. I mean, that's
he was possible. On Ellen.
Ellen, you know,
like that you know,
it's a very strategic move. Ellen is,
yeah,
the, you know, a lesbian comedian, or she's the representative for, you know, a lot of the LGBTQ community, and she's a comedian, you know, the comedian, and also a member of the community.
It was perfect.
I think that was strategic. You know, Ellen said a lot in the interview. She said, you know, I think you should ignore the internet trolls and don't let them stop you from your dreams and host the Oscars, which I would understand why he wouldn't want to do it, but I would understand why he wouldn't want to do it. You know, it's a big opportunity. You know, even when last year or 2 years ago, I don't remember when, the Oscars didn't nominate any black people, and then they wanted Chris Rock to step down from hosting it.
But yeah, because they didn't have enough black people, I think.
Right.
Yeah, it was Oscar so white.
Right.
It was that whole hashtag and a conversation about it.
Right. Which is, you know, him And when he went up there and he really addressed it, you know. But you know, Oscars is that's the Oscars. You know?
Yeah, there's an old clip of Eddie Murphy, giving a speech at the Oscars, and he said something along the lines of like, "Well, they got me up here. They got one of us up here. We won't see another one of us again up here for a dozen years," or something like that is what he said when he was on stage at the Oscars.
They wanted Eddie Murphy to host it back in like 05, 06. I think it might have been the time he was doing Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
But then I think he declined that.
But the reality is, at the end of the day, with Kevin Hart or whoever they try to get to host it,
right,
nobody cares about the Oscars anymore.
Yeah.
So the job of the host is to bring some sort of interest,
relevance
right, to this thing that nobody gives a shit about.
Yeah, you know, that's just really what it is. I see how frustrating it is for black people to be, you know, like, hey, we want recognition for our success and, you know, we want recognition for that. So I understand how frustrating it must be. But is it necessary for someone to give you an award? Does the award equal greatness? You know, like, is that really what your greatness is as an actor or an entertainer?
Uh-huh.
Does that define your greatness? You know, that I think that's what it really is. Everybody wants to have that in there. You know, Whoopi Goldberg, she has the EGOT, she has all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but I guess the question is, just made me think of this. Yeah. There is no stand-up comedy awards.
No. Well, I mean, Mark Twain, but that's about it. You know, that's what I can think of is the Mark Twain Prize when, you know, Eddie Murphy has not popped his face up in years until SNL had their reunion. And the Mark Twain Award. And, you know, when he went up there and he did a little Cosby bit. But that's the first time he's came out in the public and just went to any type of event.
Yeah.
But
how would they... So hypothetically, if they had a comedy award, how would it be judged? What would be the criteria that they could even judge comedians on? Is comedy subjective? I'm like... Well, I guess all forms of art are subjective. But comedy especially so.
All forms is... Comedy is... is defined by the comedian. Also by the audience. That would be very difficult. You know. But last person I know to win an award was Eddie Murphy with the Mark Twain and Dave Chappelle at the Grammys. I believe he won.
For...
Equanimity. Or Bird and the Revelation. Those Netflix specials he released, the four of them.
Really?
Yeah, he won.
I didn't know that.
He won, yeah.
So as a comedy album, I guess.
Yeah. That's the only category I've seen for comedy special. Jim Gaffigan just got nominated. No, Equanimity got nominated this year. Grammys in February, right? So, you don't know. I think they're in February.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those specials got nominated. That's the first time I've actually seen a comedy genre and it be like recognizable, because I don't remember seeing those in the past. I don't. That's the only time I see an award for.
Yeah. But I mean, all right. So next question. Speaking of, because Chris Rock did host the Oscars,
right?
Did you see? I'm curious to know this. Did you see that clip before all the outrage of Chris Rock, Louis C.K.?
I did.
Jerry Seinfeld. Okay, so you did.
Came out in 2011, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I was 15. I saw it, and then I went on YouTube and I watched it again. And I could relate to the amount of uncomfort that's what I saw. I saw uncomfort. Everybody else saw him laughing. I saw someone who felt uncomfortable or looked like they might have been uncomfortable. You know, people react differently to different situations. I remember when I was younger, you know, I was blind to a lot of prejudice. I was very blind to it. only because I wanted to see things as equal, which is what I wanted to do. I wanted to see things how they, I think they should be seen, but I was ignoring how things really were. Mm. There were several times where a lot of my white, who I thought were my white friends, would say things, and I would sit there, I would be there laughing uncomfortably without realizing what's being discussed. And it made me uncomfortable at first because I didn't realize it. I was blind to it, and I just had to be like eight, you know, years old. I didn't have many black friends growing up until I was around 10, 11, 12. It was just very confusing and frustrating, and I didn't understand. So in that moment, I could relate while watching this clip. I was like, wow, that was me. That was me. You know, people talk about the little context of it. It's still uncomfortable.
I think it's uncomfortable, but I think what I also saw when I was watching that clip was like four grown men that know each other well.
Right.
That know each other well to a point and at a level that the audience doesn't really understand. Mm-hmm. Because when you watch those clips, like Louis C.K. and Chris Rock worked together
all the time.
They made Pootie Tang the movie
together. Time. They write everything.
Other projects. Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock have known each other for decades.
Right.
Ricky Gervais so much I don't know as much about. So this thing of like sometimes people, when they're comfortable, they do have certain conversations.
Correct.
And here's my issue with people being as outraged as they are. I understand people feeling outraged, but people are really, really pissed about this.
Right.
At no point did any of the white men on that panel call anybody the N-word.
Of course.
Right?
It didn't happen.
It wasn't... The word got said.
Right.
But it was in the context of discussing the word.
Right.
And I think it's really weird when people get so sensitive that they react to the sound of a word...
I see what you're saying.
And not the intent behind the word.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. You know, in comedy, everything's in comedy.
Yeah. Because I can tell you how little it bothered me.
Right.
That clip, I enjoyed, not, now by the way, by the clip, it's like a 40 minute or like an hour long HBO special thing where they're talking about comedy and like,
funny, yeah.
It's all talking funny, exactly. The talking funny thing, which is the whole thing, I enjoyed it so much that I downloaded it to my phone and I've heard it 25 times, probably.
I've watched it a lot too.
And it never, like, and what's interesting is when all that conversation happens, mm-hmm. As a black person, you feel a little bit of like awkwardness.
Right.
Always. Just because you've been trained to feel awkward around that word.
Right.
Right. And be made uncomfortable by the word.
Correct.
But once you delve into the conversation, they're having an innocent conversation mm-hmm. about how they interact with that word as comedians, right? And the other thing that I do know that I don't think that the average person knows is that comedians have wild conversations.
Correct.
Like, if you go to any of the shows that we do and you go in the back where the comics are behind the building, probably smoking weed or drinking or whatever they're doing, the conversations are nuts and they don't sound like normal conversations.
No, they don't.
Nobody is saying filtered, politically correct things. And because what you're doing is you're experimenting with what you can say, how far you can push the edge. Because one of the things is as a comedian, you don't know where the edge is until you find it. Mm-hmm. And then when you find it, you go, shit, that was too far. And then you pull back a little bit. So what I think is unfortunate, I think two things happen. I think, yes, I could see it as being uncomfortable.
Right.
And I can see where Chris Rock was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see it on his face. He was a little uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, I recognized it.
However, my question is, was he uncomfortable because he himself was genuinely uncomfortable? Or was he uncomfortable because he knew this was going to be on TV and black people were going to see it and black people were going to feel away?
That's a great question.
Because these are three guys that he has decades-long relationships with.
That's correct.
That I don't think they pulled that type of conversation out of thin air. Like, they don't talk like that normally. Louis C.K. especially.
I know.
Because Louis C.K. is super comfortable saying whatever, right?
Right.
So, to me, it's like, I wonder, is Chris Rock actually uncomfortable, or he's uncomfortable because he knows the backlash he's going to get from people that don't understand the conversation, and people that don't understand the way that comedians talk? And on top of that, this was a really as a comedian, I really loved it, the whole thing, because this was the same way that all comedians talk in the green room of comedy shows. This allowed the public to get a glimpse of how these superstar comedians have those same conversations in green rooms and before and after shows. So as I'm watching it, one of the things that I actually got from it was when Louis C.K. was talking about how every year he throws his act away.
Yeah.
And starts with a brand new act every single year.
I saw that, and he said something of how he'll go to one open mic and do 5 minutes and go to another one and do another 5 minutes and do that 12 times and come out with an hour.
Yeah.
Work on it, come out with an hour. I looked at that part, I was like, dude, that is such a great way to build, you know, and to formulate stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
And another piece that actually, Louis C.K. talked about was how every year when he throws away his first act, right, and then starts a new act for the new year, and he begins his new act with the closing joke from the old act, which forces him to get funnier than he was last year.
Really?
Because you never want your opening joke to be the funniest thing you say the whole time you're on stage.
Right.
So, like, being able to see them have those kinds of conversations on a platform like HBO, where they can say whatever words they want to say.
Right.
To me, was a really cool glimpse into that world, right? For somebody like me who's on the entry level of those kinds of conversations,
right,
to see how people that are that successful and that powerful in the industry, how they approach some of the same things that we approach in trying to figure out structurally how jokes work. And to see that the one time the general public gets brought into that world,
right. They
misunderstand it and attack it.
And that might be concerning. I see what you're getting at now.
Yeah.
Then
maybe should the general public just never be allowed into that world?
I don't know, man. That's a great question, because, like, these are the guys that are supposed to say what they feel and say what they want, and, you know, you laugh at that.
Yeah.
Think
about if somebody was walking around with a camera at the back of Stiegel's.
Oh, man.
In that back room back there, and was just recording the way people talk.
Yeah.
It would be nuts.
Yeah, it would be horrible.
And that's what this was. This was these superstars opening up and having a conversation amongst themselves about the thing that they're passionate about in front of the world. And to me, people's reactions goes to show that the world's not doesn't really understand comedy. Or at least the people who do it.
Sometimes I think people are so pissed off at politicians they want to take all the heat out of comedians. Like I started to think about that, man. It's just, you know, a lot of the pressure is on comedians to say the right thing when it shouldn't be, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's weird, even when they're off stage. It's like, oh, he said this. And I'm like, well, that's his job, is to say those things.
Yeah.
Your local politician who says that, hold him to that standard.
Yeah.
Because that's what really, he's controlling how much money you take it out of your taxes. He's controlling the land and what he's controlling that, you know, the rent and all the other stuff. That guy or woman, you know, or woman is in control of those things, you know, hold them to that standard. Some of these politicians, they need to take this stuff to the open mic.
I mean, the point of comedy is brutal honesty.
Right, right.
So if you, like, to me, as far as an audience being upset about something, don't come to me and say I said something that offended you.
Right.
Come to me and tell me that I said something that's not true.
Right.
Because if that's something that's not true, then I'm just up there running my mouth. But if I say something that offends you, but it's true, then I'm doing my job.
Correct.
I've done the entire thing that I've come here to do.
That's right.
I've come here to point out something that makes people uncomfortable, that they don't address in real life, that I can get up here, and I'm clever enough to say it in a way that makes you laugh, but then also makes you go, oh, damn, that is true, isn't it? That's the whole job.
Right.
That's the whole purpose.
Right.
So if we can't do that, because the thing that they even said, like, what's funny about the whole interaction, right? Because it started with Chris Rock said that Louis C.K. is like a black man, but in all of the worst ways. He has all the worst qualities that people ascribe to being a black guy. And Louis C.K. goes, wait, so you're calling me a nigger?
Yeah.
Which, number one,
I saw that part.
Is funny.
Yeah.
And number two, that's what Chris Rock was saying.
Yeah.
So, again, at no point, and then he said it the word a couple more times, but again, the context was, he said, him and Ricky Gervais was talking about, like, how, you know, you guys say nigger on stage, I don't, and they're going back and forth. Nobody was calling anybody that word.
Right.
Whether it be anyone in the room, anyone in life, they were talking about the word and the context in which they use the word as comedians. And people talk about, oh, Jerry Seinfeld, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld's some kind of a hero because he said that he doesn't say the word and he doesn't see the funny in it. But that's just his choice. And I don't think, no disrespect to Jerry Seinfeld, I love Jerry Seinfeld, but I don't think that he doesn't say that word because he has some sort of passionate thing. He's a clean comedian, so he can't say the word because he's a clean comedian. There's a lot of words he doesn't say.
Right.
He doesn't say shit on stage. He doesn't say any curse words on stage.
No.
So, well, you, as a comedian who doesn't curse on stage, by the way, Dorian Gale does not curse on stage.
No, I don't cuss. I do talk about real life topics. I just don't cuss.
But as somebody else who does not curse on stage, you can't say, oh, I don't say the N-word because I choose not to. No, your whole act is curse-free. Therefore, you can't say it.
Correct.
So, I don't find it that, again, I don't find it that Jerry Seinfeld had some sort of passionate reasoning behind it. He just said he doesn't say it. And then, Louis C.K., I've only ever heard him say, and here's the thing, because they recently had that leaked footage.
Well, yeah, the leaked footage.
Well, not footage, I guess it was audio.
Well, yeah, it is a leaked audio. I think at the same time that, back in 2011 when that came out, he did the bit about the C word, The F word, the five letter one. The six letter one. And the four letter F word. He did, and the N word. And he used them.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a bit, and he was using them to point out how silly people are with these words, and how it was just very, it was creative. When your back's against the wall, it's kind of hard to point the finger when you're cornered. I think that's where Louis C.K. is at.
Yeah. As far as like his own personal situation with everything that's going on with him.
Where he's at right now. Yeah. I think it's just that difficult.
But people like, and this is the reason why I want to bring this up, because I've had back and forth conversations on Facebook and stuff with other comedians about the most recent thing that Louis C.K. did, right? And the most recent thing was he did a whole bit where he was talking about the kids that were at the Parkland shooting,
right?
He talked about the kids at the Parkland shooting, and he talked about, there was two things in that. Damn, it was the kids at the Parkland shooting.
I think he had something about LGBTQ. Did he say something about LGBTQ? The community? Did he say something about the community?
It wasn't transgender people. It was people that don't ascribe to a sex at all.
Right.
Cannot remember for the life of me what the name of that is. Non-binary.
Non-binary.
He talked about the Parkland shooting kids and non-binary people. Okay, there we go.
Right.
The non-binary part, I'd have to re-listen to it, because that what stood out to me was the stuff about the Parkland shooters, right? And the comments that a couple other comedians made was, oh, it's really lazy and easy for Louis C.K. to make fun of kids these days, right? And like, that's a hack thing to do, right?
Okay.
And the part that frustrates me, and the part that made me mad, and where I got into these arguments on social media was, first of all, everyone who I saw having these conversations are not brilliant comedians, right?
Right.
And I think that Louis C.K. has gotten to a point where you have to give him his credit for being a brilliant comedian.
The credit is there.
Because every time, what I actually personally love about Louis C.K. Uh-huh. is he tackles really hard things.
He does. And that had always been one of my favorite comedians. You know, you can separate the personal. I think the art is good. You know, I think his art is good. You know, I think it's very, very good. What he does is very good. He does it at a very good level. That's just what I think. Mm-hmm. You know,
because I listen to, and the reason why I think it triggered me more than maybe it should have, mm-hmm. was there's this clip of Patrice O'Neal that I love, where he was talking about, this was years and years and years ago, when Tracy Morgan got in a lot of trouble because he went on this rant on stage, and he said the word faggot like 19 times in like 5 minutes. Wow. It was nuts.
Wow.
Right? And he got into all of this trouble. And what Patrice was talking about was how all these different comedians turned on Tracy Morgan.
Really?
Right? And it was interesting because sort of Patrice's point was, these were people that had Tracy Morgan not been in this position, kind of like how you say Louis C.K.'s in a bad position right now.
Right.
These are people that would never fix their mouths to disrespect Tracy Morgan in the world of comedy, right? So what I find really corny and what upset me was all of these people that are barely scratching the surface,
right,
of being comedians, who now have all of this high and mighty attitude to give towards Louis C.K., who is somebody who's 3 decades into being a stand-up comedian.
Yeah,
I know. He was talking about opening for Jerry Seinfeld when he was 19 years old. The guy's in his 50s now.
I think I saw that footage.
Yeah. So somebody who's 30 years in has proven to be one of the best to ever do it, right? And now you're going to call him a hack because you feel like what he was saying was simple and easy to write. How dare you say that when he's written the things that we've known he's written? And he's written stand-up specials that tackle things that 99% of comedians are terrified to ever talk about. And he's been able to say things that are hugely uncomfortable, but say it in a way that makes you laugh and makes you think. That's why, to me, I have to give him credit for being brilliant as a comedian.
As a comedian, yes.
And to me, it's very... I've seen a lot of regular schmegular comedians who have a lot of high and mighty shit to say about someone who, number one, is brilliant and has proven themselves, and number two, that was a secret recording that somebody took of a random set that he was doing. That wasn't a special that he intended to put out. He was figuring out, anytime you're doing a set and it's not a special, you're still figuring that material out.
Right.
So let's say, number one, I wasn't offended by anything that he said. However, even if I was offended by something that he said, he was in the figuring it out stage.
Right.
Who's to say somebody that whose entire career in comedy is about saying really, really tough things and having really, really hard conversations? What if his process of getting to the point where he can make those things palatable for an audience, what if that process is really ugly? And he's got to figure it out to where he can get it to a point where he can get in front of an auditorium with thousands of people and make people laugh and cry at the same time about something that's really difficult. What if that process looks ugly until it's completed? And now we live in a time where people who've never done any of that feel like they want to get on the internet and have this attitude like they can teach Louis C.K. something.
Right.
And I just think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I think... If you're not, I think if you're not on that level, you shouldn't have the right to critique. Like you're mentioning the Seinfelds and the Gervais and Rock, those are the guys, you know, that might be able to call them up. If anything, you know, if they don't have a problem, they wouldn't do it, or you know, which they probably haven't, you know. But those are, you have to be on that level to even have a word to say. Because we all aspire to even get to that level of success. It's just, we all aspire to get to that level. I know me, I'm starting to dig into things that are deep, you know. I'm exploring different communities, such as the LGBTQ community.
Wait, what do you mean by you're exploring the LGBT community?
I'm saying exploring. I've been to a couple meetings and... You know, I just sat with them. I'm not a member. I'm not a member of the community, but I've been to a couple of the meetings at my school. I talked to people who are members of the community, and I'm just able to sit back and see how they organize things and how they go to the government office and how they form their march and the paperwork they do to fill out and how they start, how they really run an organization that is about what they're really about, you know? I've talked to people who are Black Lives Matter and are about Black Lives Matter and how they're trying to redo what was done that they didn't like and how they want to reform that movement and progress for the success of Black people. I've talked to a couple feminists who are in the New Age feminist movement, and you know, last year I got invited down to FAU. Mm-hmm. The women's organization booked me to perform at this show that they were having. They sent me a list. They said, you must talk about these things. Now, usually that does not happen if you are a comedian.
What the hell was on the list?
they said, we want you to cover, we want you to talk about something about sexual assault. We want you to talk about the awareness and how racism affects women. We want you to talk about the workplace. They gave me a whole list of things that we would prefer you talk about these things. They wanted me to be quote-unquote woke. It was the most weird experience I've had, but I felt like it was necessary. I was like, okay, we're on the same page here. We can do the same job from different positions. Like you said, telling the truth and, you know, letting it be true. That was one of my first experiences working with anyone from the feminist group. So these different organizations and these different things, you know, which I have not said, hey, listen, I may not agree fully, but I think that you guys deserve that place in America. You know, I'm pretty much along the lines of each movement. You know, I'm what they call an ally.
Mm-hmm.
That means like you may not be completely submerged in it, but you at least agree that these things and you know, groups of people deserve it. You know, especially you know me being a young black male in America. You know, just from the way I see things, it's important, and that's where my comedy is really starting to head towards. It's an exciting experience. You know, they say people are in this sunken place when they're not conscious to what's happening in society. I feel like I'm coming to that point to where I'm conscious of what's happening in society. And the best place to put it is in my comedy on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So what are your comedy goals for 2019?
I want to dig deeper. Dig a lot deeper. Pull out everything I have. I'm talking about like the deepest stuff, the things that I have done, and the things I really that I have experienced. LGBT
meetings, huh?
Huh?
I said you really did go to the LGBTQ meetings, didn't you?
I went to a couple.
I know.
And they were, you know, I went to a couple. Like I said, I'm not a member of that community, but I went to a couple, and they were, you know, they were just telling me like, Dorian, hey, you know, when we go out and we march, this is what we do, and we talk to these people who are working for the governor. We support this nonprofit organization as well. And, you know, it was just a learning experience. So for 2019 and me, I just want to be able to talk about those things from a great observation. You know, I might be headed towards observational. I feel like that's where I am. You know, not just within myself, but myself within these certain situations and what I've experienced, all relating back to what's really happening in the world. And I just want to make the connection a little bit deeper because, you know, there's a lot of comedians and comics, but, you know, the ones that I really admire is, like, you know, the Chappelles and the Chris Rocks and those guys that can not only say, hey, I've experienced this, and this is what I've experienced with these, and this is what's going on. And to make you laugh at the same time, that's my top thing, man. That's what I really want to get. It's in my heart. Like, I really want to get to that point to where people will recognize that okay, this kid has something to say, and it's who he is. You know, he does agree that if you're a part of the LGBT community, you deserve, you know, those things. Or if you're Black Lives Matter, you deserve that. Or if you're a woman in America, you deserve that. That's where I'm at. That's where my head is at. And I've been there for a couple months now. And I believe that's where my comedy's evolving. You know, bigger and bolder, deeper and more cold, hard truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm headed.
All right. Well, again, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
This was dope. This was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah. I want to do more of these. I want to figure out how to get, though. I would like to have at least 3.
Right.
Maybe as many as 4.
Yep.
So that we can have these with, just to get different perspectives on a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this is our first time doing this, so thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is the Chris Robinson Podcast. I am your host, comedian Chris Robinson. Thank you guys so much.